Hey guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Candace.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Yeah. I've detoxed from last week's episode.
Yeah. Just a little bit.
A little. Still kind of.
We're not going to talk about him.
No,
though.
We're not. No. What do you mean?
We're done.
What episode?
About who?
I don't know. Hey, I do want to say something though.
Okay.
Current affairs. Did you see that the Oxford school shooter's mother was convicted of 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter?
I did not see that.
That really is huge. You know, since Columbine,
mm-hmm.
we've been asking ourselves, where are the parents?
Right.
Which, okay, true. But some kids are very good at flying under the radar. However, when you let your child just stay in their room and yeah. you don't check in and they don't check in with you and you can't be bothered, this kid begged to go to therapy.
Oh my gosh.
He reached out time and time again. He wrote letters and it's so sad.
I haven't even heard any of that.
Oh my gosh. Y'all just look into it. I won't into it, but she's been convicted and I'm like,
wow.
This is like unprecedented.
It really is.
And just pay attention to what your kids are doing, guys. Don't have a loaded gun in the house.
No, exactly.
You clearly know your son is having mental health issues. He's reaching out for help. He's begging to get therapy. He's like, do you even love me? And you've got a loaded gun in the house.
Oh my gosh. I mean, some people should just not be parents.
Wrap it up. Okay. If you don't want to have kids, wrap it up.
I mean,
you're responsible.
And yeah, you've got the point of, okay, these killers, the ones who go off and shoot people, they have their own will. They make their own choices. But at the same time, especially in a case like this, a parent should be held responsible.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there have been other cases where we're like, how is this happening? How are the parents not?
Yeah.
This is huge. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Maybe this sets a tone. You're going to be held responsible for your children's actions.
Right.
In a major capacity like this.
That's so sad.
It is so sad.
Well, yeah. Go read up on that. I'm going to check that out myself.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we'll be watching the Selena new docuseries.
Yeah.
Because Yolanda is up for parole.
Mm-hmm. And she's ready to give her side of the story.
I don't want to hear your side, Yolanda. Yeah. You're a stealing, money-grubbing murderer.
Like, what do you have to say?
Nothing. Like, what she can't.
Yeah.
Selena was an angel.
No.
Gone too soon. All right, Lena, what you got?
Okay. So today we're talking about Janelle Patton. She was born on June 30th of 1972 in Sydney, Australia.
Hey.
I'm not going to try to give the accent because it never works out. You're better at that than I am. So she was born in Australia to Rob and Carolyn Patton. She was close to her parents, the only child. She was their pride and joy. She was musically talented. She played the piano and the clarinet. She was said to be a perfectionist and really smart. When Janelle was 5 years old, a teacher had written a note to her parents after school one day. In summarizing, it basically said that Janelle was academically above average, but she also tends to take over her work and play groups.
Was this a note about Janelle or me? She's a control freak.
Yeah. So at 5 years old, the teacher says, she added at the end of the note, unless this can be rectified, I fear that her husband would be sorely handpecked. What? A 5 year old.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. So yeah, she was known to be a little bossy and opinionated, even at a young age. She would go on to graduate high school and then went on to college for orthopedics, but she decided that that was not for her, so she tried a career in finance.
Oh, quite the switch there.
Yes. So for the next 5 years, she was really just trying to find herself. She dated a lot, and she found a guy who was in the Navy. So this was basically a long distance relationship. This guy would come and visit often. Their relationship ultimately, ended badly.
Mm.
Janelle turned up with a dislocated jaw.
Oh my gosh, that is bad.
Yeah. She told everyone that she fell while she was dancing.
Oh, Janelle.
But nobody seemed to really believe her.
Oh.
Eventually, this guy was charged with assault.
Oh, good.
So then Janelle started dating a man named Todd. She really liked him. She was into him. And she wanted to make it a long-term thing, but he just wasn't as into her as she was into him. And they eventually broke it off. So it seemed that she just was going from one bad relationship to the next.
Yeah.
Janelle at this point was just lost. She started drinking a lot and taking medication for depression.
And how old was she at this time?
She was in her 20s.
See, that's tough because as a woman, you feel like that's when you are supposed to be getting settling locked down and your biological clock is ticking. You think, I better start having kids before I get too old. And when that doesn't fall into place, you start to really question.
Right. Well, and especially being a perfectionist.
Exactly.
You know, she thought she had this plan right out of high school, and then she decides that's not for her. And, you know, so she's just hasn't found her niche.
Yeah.
So jumping to 1999, Janelle was 27. She needed a fresh start.
Mm-hmm.
She moved from Sydney, Australia to Norfolk Island. Her parents didn't want her to go. They felt that she was just running from her problems. They didn't feel that the small island life was really going to be good for her. Norfolk Island is located in the Pacific Ocean between Australia and New Zealand. It's very small with a population of about 2,000 people.
Wow.
Spanning over 13 square miles.
Wow.
So a very tight-knit community. Yeah. This was one of those places that you just felt safe. Everyone left their doors unlocked and they just didn't have to worry about crime. This was described by Janelle's dad as Janelle's paradise.
Oh.
She started working at a hotel and made friends quickly and started dating again. So maybe the small island life was for her.
Hmm.
The first time her parents came to visit her was in March of 2002. She had been there for about 2 years. And she was so excited that her parents were coming to see her. On March 30th of 2002, they arrived and Janelle showed them around the island. They went to eat at the hotel where she worked so that she could show off her parents to her coworkers.
Aww.
At 9 p.m., they went their separate ways to get some downtime, get some sleep. Janelle went to her cottage and her parents stayed at the hotel. Janelle had a morning shift for work the next day, so they planned to meet up at lunchtime. Janelle got to work at 7 a.m. that next day on March 31st, which was Easter Sunday. Her coworkers said that she was on cloud nine. Everything in her world was just right.
Aww.
Ron and Carol woke up that morning and went for breakfast and piddled around at their hotel waiting for Janelle. At 1 p.m., they were getting a little curious because they thought for sure that Janelle would be done with her shift and should have been ready to meet up with them for lunch.
Right.
They thought maybe she just had to work a little later, so they decided to go for a walk by the bay. They wrote her a note and left it on the door to let her know where they would be. And they went down to Emily Bay to waste time, which, judging by the pictures online, is a beautiful place that I would just love to visit.
Wow.
Yeah. When they got back at 2:30 p.m. and there was still no sign of Janelle, they tried calling her a few times, but she didn't answer.
No.
At 4 p.m., they really got worried, so they went to Janelle's cottage. When they arrived, they saw her car there, and they walked up to the door. They noticed it was unlocked. They walk in, and they noted that everything seemed normal. Nothing was out of normal, except Janelle was not there. They were there for about 20 minutes, and Janelle's friend, Katie Nobbs, showed up. Ron and Carol expressed their concerns to her. They told her that they were supposed to meet Janelle for lunch, and they hadn't heard from her. So Katie called the hotel, and they told her that Janelle clocked out at 11:10 a.m.
Oh.
Yeah, and they haven't heard from her since. She had already gone. Katie told Janelle's parents that Janelle walks the same route to Queen Elizabeth's lookout. She goes every morning on this walk. So she says, let's go retrace the path. We'll see what we can find. So maybe we'll run into her or something. But they did not run into her. It was just
nothing.
Yeah, empty, fruitless.
Mm.
Ron and Carol went back to their hotel and talked to the manager. The manager called around to people that they could think of who might have seen Janelle, but that was unfruitful as well. At 7:50 p.m., it's all day long.
This is terrible. Her parents aren't from here.
No.
So they don't know. Like, they don't know.
They just got there
the
day before.
Oh my gosh, this is terrifying.
So at 7:50 p.m., Ron and Carol decided it was time to call the police.
Yeah.
Foxy, he was Janelle's landlord.
Okay.
He made the call to police. And when he hung up with them, he told Ron and Carol that the police department asked them to come into the station and talk. So they all went together.
All right.
Ron, Carol, Foxy, and his wife, Ruth.
All right.
When they all got to the police station, they took her parents to a private room. That's where they were told that a tourist had found a body of a young woman at around 6:30 p.m.
Oh, no.
Yes. This body was found at Cockpit Waterfall Reserve, which was a main attraction to tourists.
Jeez.
Carol said in a news interview, he said that a body of a young woman was found and we need to identify the body before we go on any further. She said once she heard that, she just knew that it was Janelle because Norfolk Island, two young women going missing on the same day.
Yeah. What are the odds of that?
Right. So the tourist had been walking around the reserve when she saw a sheet of black plastic. She was curious, so she went to check it out. And as she approached, she saw body parts sticking out from under it. She immediately called the police. The woman was lying face down, and her shorts and underwear had been cut and pulled down.
Sicko.
Janelle's body had cuts and bruises all over. Some cuts superficial, some deep.
She fought.
Yes. Police did not want to put Ron and Carol through the trauma mm-hmm. of seeing their daughter like this, so they asked Ruth, the landlady, to come identify the body.
Oh, my Lord.
She confirmed, in fact, that it was Janelle Patton. The news ran fast across the island, mm-hmm. across Australia, and really across the world. Mm-hmm. The community was stunned. This was the first murder in 150 years.
Lena.
Yes.
Do you remember the case I had like several episodes ago and they hadn't had a murder in 40 years? And I was like, whoa.
I know.
100 and what?
150.
150 years.
Since 1893. So in the 1700s and 1800s, Norfolk Island was a penal colony.
Yeah.
And where criminals were sent overseas for punishment mm-hmm. with forced labor and isolation from society. So lots of bad dudes.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure there was like...
lots of killing.
Yeah. I tried researching that, but I just knew that was going to make this case more...
That's weeds.
Yeah. So
that's some weeds right there.
Yeah. Maybe I'll look into that another day. But yeah, so they... The community was starting to worry, like, who did this?
Wow.
It can't be someone in our community. It had to be a tourist. Yeah,
exactly.
Is this going to happen again?
Whoa.
So the Australian Federal Police got involved, and here's what they discovered. Janelle clocked out from work at 11:10 a.m. She's seen on the security camera at the main supermarket on the island at 11:16 a.m., She also saw her landlady, Ruth, there at the supermarket. They talked for a minute. Janelle had bought some Easter eggs for Ruth and her family
Aww.
And handed them over to her. She's like, here, I bought you some Aww. Easter eggs. And so they talked for a minute and then they headed home, or Janelle headed home. She lived in that cottage behind their house, Ruth and Foxy's house. And so Ruth and Foxy noted that at around 11:30 a.m., they saw Janelle on her daily morning walk. She was going toward Queen Elizabeth Lookout. Another woman, Jody Williams, was driving the same roads, the path that Janelle took. She was driving mm-hmm. around trying to lull her baby to sleep.
Aww, as you do.
Yeah. She saw Janelle walking at 11:40 a.m., going toward the lookout.
This is quite the timeline. Like,
yeah, very precise.
Yes.
So Jody had circled around, and when she came back around, Janelle was gone.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who lived in the last house just before reaching the lookout said that she saw Janelle talking to one or two people who were sitting in a white car.
Hmm.
Down below Queen Elizabeth Lookout at Norfolk Golf Club, two men reported hearing a loud scream. You know, last week's case, you said a blood-curdling scream. That's what they said.
Oh, my gosh.
He went out. One of them, I guess both of the men, I don't know, they went outside to see what was going on. But by the time he got out there, the screaming stopped.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't have a time for that specifically, mm-hmm. but he wasn't sure what time this. I'm sorry, he wasn't sure what direction the scream was coming from. The witness said that the scream lasted for about a minute, and it was so loud that somebody thought it was the reverse thrust of an engine of a plane landing what? At the airport.
Oh my gosh. Goodness gracious.
Like, yeah. Do we go run and find out what's happening?
See, this is the bystander effect.
Yeah.
All over again. And it's true of every single thing. You're like, oh, someone will figure it out. Oh, I hope they're okay.
Yeah.
Or I'm sure someone else will help.
Right.
Or, oh my God, this is what we do.
It is. Yeah.
Because we rationalize and we go, oh, it's probably nothing. I'm making a big deal of nothing.
Yeah. You're exactly right.
Oh my gosh, this is haunting.
So a forensic pathologist did the exam on Janelle and found 64 injuries from her head down to her feet. Fragments of green glass were found in her hair.
Ooh.
So it was believed that one of the weapons was a glass bottle.
Oh my gosh.
Janelle had several broken bones, including a fractured skull, dislocated ankle, and her pelvis was fractured. She had several bruises. One of the bruises was in the shape of a letter M on her thigh. I don't know. And she had grip marks around her wrists, which indicated the attacker or attackers grabbed her wrists and restrained her.
Mm-hmm.
She had several defensive wounds, proving that Janelle had fought back. Her thumb was almost severed off of her hand.
Oh, no.
And she had other cuts as if she grabbed the blade of the knife that she was being attacked with. It was concluded that the fatal blow was a stab wound to the chest that pierced her lung.
Oh, no.
Green and white flecks of paint were found on her clothes, in her hair, on her body, and under her fingernails.
Oh.
Even though her clothes and underwear were cut and pulled down.
Cut? Wow.
Yeah. They found no evidence of sexual assault.
Hmm.
Very strange, right?
Hmm.
At 3:30 p.m. that same day of the murder, there had been a short 15-minute heavy rainstorm.
Oh, my gosh.
The area where she was found was soggy and had puddles of water. They determined that Janelle had been left where she was found before the rainstorm at 3:30 because the black plastic sheet that was covered over her body had puddles of water on top of
it. Well, at least that preserved evidence, though.
Right.
Hopefully.
But they also did know that, evidence around her, not under the plastic, was going to be probably washed away.
Right.
Footprints, DNA. Mm-hmm. At around 3:57, a group of four boys had gone down to the reserve. They filmed themselves riding their boogie boards down the hill after the rain. So it was all slick and they're just doing what boys do.
Yeah.
Filming themselves. In one of the videos, the black tarp can be seen in the background.
That just sent chills.
I know. They had no idea.
Oh my gosh.
They were so oblivious. The detective determined that the killer must have been in a hurry to have left her body out in the open like that. I mean, apart from covering her up, they really didn't try to conceal her.
Right.
It was out in the open. Like, there's trees.
Definitely didn't have a plan.
No. I mean, but there were trees around, but they left her in the middle of a field.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the black plastic sheet was sent off for testing and 10 partial fingerprints were lifted from
it. Wow.
These fingerprints actually did not belong to just one person.
Well, yeah. I mean, it seems like more than one person.
It sounds like it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to that at the end.
Okay.
Yeah. So there were like more than just one person. So it was a few different people. Norfolk was really strict with their laws. So they knew who came and went.
Mm-hmm.
You had to, I guess, I don't know how they did it, but they knew who was on.
Yeah, it was an island,
right? Yeah, exactly.
I imagine you'd have to sign in or check in or.
Exactly. Yeah. So they knew who was on the island that day. The day of the murder, there was a little over 2,200 people.
Wow.
Consisting of residents, tourists, and visitors. Everyone within the age of 15 to 70 years old was asked to give their fingerprints to load into their database.
Wow.
Or their records, whatever, however they did it. Not everyone was willing to volunteer their prints. Some felt like it was an invasion of privacy.
Okay.
Like,
why? What are you doing that you don't need your fingerprints taken?
We have a dead woman. Like, what if it was you?
What if it was your daughter?
Exactly.
Your sister?
Come on now.
Ugh.
So this seemed like a lot of work, but the detectives were willing to do what it took to solve this. I mean,
well, 2,000 some odd people is a lot.
Yeah.
But you're not talking about the United States.
Exactly.
You're talking about an island.
Yeah.
And it can only be one of 2,000 people.
Exactly.
We so, should yeah, it's to- a lot of work, but they've at least, they can start narrowing it down now.
Yeah. And so, but I mean, these detectives really seemed much more interested mm-hmm. in this case than the detectives in any of the cases from last yes. week's story. But we're not going to talk about
that. I don't know what you're talking about.
So in May, every single person over the age of 10 was sent a questionnaire asking them what they did the day of Easter Sunday. It asked if or how they knew Janelle and asked for any detail that could help.
Wow, a questionnaire.
Yeah.
Seems antiquated and so simple, but right. like brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. Like maybe just some.
Yeah, like they could get some kind of.
But, you know, not even just, you know, what if there's someone who knows something that doesn't want to actively right. call and oh hey they
oh here, they here's sent this me this question. Thing I'll just write it down and yeah. send it back.
They won't have to know it was right. me that sent it in. Carol went to Janelle's cottage on April 7th to get Janelle's things. She found a diary under Janelle's oh. pillow. Janelle wrote a lot, like in the last 4 years I think I read she like wrote in it every single day. So detectives used it to lead them and get as many clues as they could. Mm-hmm. And it was said that, I mean, yeah, she wrote in it every day for 4 years, but like the last few days of her life, she didn't really write a whole lot.
Oh.
So I thought that was interesting.
She was busy.
In May of 2004, Detective Bob Peters decided to hold an inquest where he named 16 persons of interest.
Whoa.
He got all of these names from the diary, everything.
Whoa.
Yeah.
16.
Everything that she wrote from the people that she dated, her friends that she wow. made.
Okay.
So, yeah. All these stories were publicly read.
Janelle.
Yes.
All, she's rolling over in her grave right now. All of her deepest. Her diary's being read.
I know. In public. Oh, yeah. My her gosh. Deepest thoughts and the drama between her and others in the community.
That's messed up. Yeah. That's an invasion of privacy.
Exactly. But it's almost like the detective's like, I'm not holding back. Like,
yeah, this is so opposite from when they're like, we're not going to release anything to the public.
Yeah.
They're like, let's release everything to the public.
Yeah.
Aye, aye, aye.
So, yeah, 16 persons of interest. And just to talk about a few, I won't go into detail because weird. So Susan Fields was one of Janelle's first friends that she made when she reached the island, when she went and settled there. And Susan had helped Janelle find a quick place to stay, which was with Charles Mangetti. Janelle stayed in Charles's spare room for just 1 week. Mm-hmm. Charles did not like that Janelle would stay up late drinking what? And she played loud music.
Oh, okay.
Well, not just that, but Charles would get calls really late and it annoyed Janelle. So she one night went and pulled the phone right off the wall.
Oh, no.
What in 1 week? You
they're all at each other's throats.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
To add to it, Janelle accused Charles of having an affair with Susan. Well, Susan was married with a child, oh, and no. so neither one of them appreciated that yeah. accusation. So he kicked her out. Susan and Janelle got into a fist fight.
Oh my gosh.
And Susan was charged with assault.
Wow.
Susan's alibi for the day of the murder was a little contradicting, but ultimately she was cleared.
All right.
Witnesses had also given reports that they saw Charles pull Janelle's hair and threaten her one time. Wow. He also allegedly told a friend 5 days after Janelle's murder, if the cops ask, tell them I was drinking with you on Sunday.
I don't like that at all.
Okay. Charles's house and cars were searched and nothing was found that would link him to the case. So, and they also compared his fingerprints and he was excluded. Mm-hmm. Janelle's next move was with, or was to Paul Mangetti's house. Paul was Charles's brother.
Okay.
Paul was widowed with four children. And when Janelle moved in, they became intimate. Their live-in relationship lasted for 9 months. They fought a lot.
Okay.
So Paul asked her to move out. Janelle settled next in the cottage and continued to date Paul. She wrote in her diary in May of 2001 that Paul had stood her up and even spit in her face. Like, ew. Who are these guys? So
Mangetti spaghetti. I mean, there's something in there.
I mean, they're so hateful to women. Know. What the heck?
Get them out of here.
I mean, she didn't seem very easy to get along with either, but right. to spit in some, yeah. come on, so disrespectful. In August, she wrote that they had broken up for good. And then Paul started seeing this other woman named Robin. There are several entries about their volatile relationship. Other than the diary entries, Paul could not be linked to the murder through prints or DNA, and he and Robin were excluded.
Okay.
So yeah, so these seem like very possible suspects with motive. And there were a few other men that she dated or hung out with, and she talked about them in the diary. They were all questioned. Each alibi, each fingerprint was checked and excluded. And I'm not going to tell you all 16 because we'd be here all night. Yeah. So reward money was offered for any information that would help in the arrest. It had been a couple years. They had nothing else to really go on. And the detectives, they had not forgotten about Janelle. Like, mm-hmm. they kept coming back to it, seeing...
Well, it doesn't seem like they're doing much more on this island.
Yeah.
There's no murders happening other right? than this one, so...
Yeah. Well, and these detectives were actually... They flew over from Australia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they decided just to start from the beginning.
Start fresh.
So they start from the beginning, first report. They are going through, looking at the fingerprints again. Well, they honed in on a set of fingerprints that they didn't quite pay attention to before.
Go on.
This guy, whose name is Glenn McNeil, did not give up his fingerprints voluntarily. He had actually been interviewed and fingerprinted in a burglary case not long after Janelle's murder. He had moved to Norfolk with his girlfriend, Alicia Taylor, in 2000, and they got married in 2002, the year of the murder. So in 2004, detectives tested his prints, and he was a match to two of the fingerprints on the black plastic.
Okay.
This guy also had a white Honda car.
You don't say.
Mm-hmm. Remember that white car she was seen? Okay. So get this. Shortly after the murder, Glenn ended his marriage. That was fast because he just got married.
Okay.
They just didn't get along. All so right. he moved back to his hometown of Nelson, New Zealand, and built a new family with two kids.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. An alert was put out on the island to be on the lookout for this white Honda. Well, in December of 2004, not far from Glenn McNeil's former home, someone found this abandoned white Honda on their property. I'm scratching my head because it took you from 2002 to 2004.
That's what I was thinking, like, okay, we talked about the 2,000 some odd people. That narrows it down.
Yeah.
Now you're talking about a white car. That narrows it down even further.
Right.
You weren't checking every single white sedan that was on the island?
In 2000?
Okay.
But not just that, but this person just found this car on their property.
And it's been there the whole time?
So I'm not clear on that. I don't know if they had just found it in 2004 or if they... found it and just was like, oh, we'll leave it there. And then the police were like, hey, do y'all know anything about a white car?
It seems like it really majorly slipped through the cracks somewhere.
I'm confused about that part. This car was proven to be Glenn McNeil's, and it was searched as well as his former home and the home of the property next to his former home.
Oh, okay.
The property next to his home was being built on at the time of the murder.
Right.
In the car, they found flecks of green and white paint. Mm-hmm. In the car and in his home, they found green glass, like mm-hmm. what was found in her hair. It all was tested and was a match. Part of the label on one of the pieces of glass showed a label, like it was a wine bottle.
Okay.
Remember they said that one of the weapons could have been a glass bottle. Okay, yeah. Here we go. They also found a black plastic sheet, just like the one she was covered with in his garden. Two years later, it's all still there.
Wow. Isn't that amazing? He didn't even try.
No.
He didn't even try to get rid of any of it. He just was like, I'll just go back to New Zealand and.
Yeah. I mean, the way he dumped her body, didn't conceal her, left his home, didn't move, pack. He just.
What is this guy?
Human hair was also found in Glenn's car. The hairs were sent off to the U.S. for a more complex test, as these hairs did not have a root to test. And so the U.S. had this testing that they could,
mitochondria.
Words are hard.
Yeah.
And yeah, so they did that test and it was compared with Janelle's mother's hair. 12 months. It took 12 months for this test. Wow. You know, sending it over to the U.S. And anyway, 12 months later, the results were in. The hair found in the trunk of Glenn's car was a match to Janelle's family. Hence, Janelle. Detectives found and surveilled Glenn McNeil while they were waiting on the the hair. So they found him in New Zealand and they just were watching at his every move. On February 1st, 2006, Glenn McNeil was taken down.
Take him down to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Interesting side note, though, it was February 1st when I read that Glenn was arrested on February 1st, 2006.
Wow. Ooh, Twilight Zone.
You'll find another interesting side note about February 1st here in just a little bit.
Oh, can't wait.
Yeah. So he gets to the police station and they get all set up for the interview and Glenn just spills it.
Wow.
He said that in the morning of the murder, he smoked some weed and he went for a drive.
Okay.
He said as he was driving, he bent down to pick up a pack of cigarettes that fell. When he took his eyes off the road, he accidentally hit something. He thought it was an animal, but he did stop to check it out. He got out of the car, he looks around, and he sees a woman under his car.
What?
He picked her up, he put her in the trunk of the car, drove home, smoked some more weed.
What?
And took some pills.
But Janelle was seen talking
mm-hmm.
to some people in the car.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Carry on.
Doesn't make sense, nope. Does it? Okay. He heard the woman groaning. He's inside
doing
some more drugs, but she's in the trunk of the car and he can hear her groaning. What? He says he grabbed a fish fillet knife, opened the trunk of the car, and stabbed her a couple times. Like, he looked away. And just stabs her a couple times just to, I guess, finish her off. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
He says she didn't fight or anything, but he had to get rid of her before his wife got home. So he wrapped her up in the black plastic and he took and dumped her at the reserve.
No.
I mean, mind you, the police didn't give him these details. Mm-hmm. I mean, although...
He knew what.
Yeah. I mean, he could have heard it. It was all over the mm-hmm. news. So yeah, he could have got the details from what reports and stuff, but he said he threw the knife in the ocean. He then went home and played video games till he had to go pick up his wife from work.
Okay.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but come on. Thank you, but no thank you. Yeah,
that's a lie. You sit on a throne of lies, sir.
Right. You confess to her killing. Okay, yes. But the pathology and autopsy reports do not match the story at all. Her injuries were not consistent with being run over by a car. Right. Also, a couple of quick stabs with no fighting back.
No.
She had 64 injuries. Yeah. And what about her defensive wounds on her hands? She fought back.
Yeah.
Also, there was no blood in his car to indicate or suggest that he stabbed her in the car.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, make it make sense.
And he left it there. So it would have been
exactly. There. Yeah. She would have poured out her mm-hmm. blood into his.
Exactly.
So no. So Detective Peters then shows Glenn the pictures of Janelle's body. And he asks, how did she get all these injuries? Right. Like you say, you just stabbed her a couple times.
Tell us more of the truth.
He says, it must have been from under the car when I ran her over. By the way, they did inspect the undercarriage of the car and there was no evidence of blood.
Right.
Hair, human tissue.
Drag marks on her body.
Right. Thank you for bringing that up. There was no road rash, no...
No white paint on her person?
No. So Glenn was charged for Janelle's murder and went to trial. At pre-trial, Glenn ended up retracting his confession. I mean, it couldn't be
chestnut.
Couldn't be that easy, huh? He said that he was in a bad mental state when he was questioned.
Mm-hmm.
So he just said what he thought that they wanted to hear mm-hmm. and he would have just admitted to anything.
Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
You would just admit to killing somebody?
Hey, it happens, but like, I know. It doesn't seem like they pressed him.
No.
Very hard. I mean, he wasn't in there for 14 hours being harassed and like psychologically tortured and then made a false confession.
Exactly.
He like pretty quickly went on with the story, right?
This guy. Yeah. Yeah. So he said that he never met Janelle in his life and he pled not guilty. But wait, there is more.
Oh.
Other evidence was found on and near Janelle's body. A forensic biologist testified in the pretrial hearing that DNA of an unidentified woman,
his wife,
was found on Janelle's body and clothes and under her fingernails.
Wow.
And on a cigarette that was near her body.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Definitely sounds like his wife.
Sounds like it.
So after the pretrial, Janelle's friend Tracy Wilkinson reached out to Bob Peters and told him that just a couple weeks before the murders, Janelle asked her if she knew a woman named Alicia and her husband Glenn McNeil.
Oh my.
Tracy told Janelle, I don't know him, but I've heard that he's been sleeping around.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yikes.
She asked Janelle why she wanted to know, and Janelle just changed the subject. Yeah.
I don't like where this is headed.
Tracy also said that the day of the murder, she was working at the hotel when she heard a scream. When she went outside to look, she saw Alicia with a red face. Alicia was talking to someone and she was motioning with her hand as if she was stabbing something.
What?
Like she's just telling someone a story, acting
this
like...
This person?
Yeah.
Oh my.
So Tracy's watching this conversation.
Jeez.
Tracy called out to Alicia and when Alicia turned around, she saw that Alicia had red stuff on her. She asked Alicia, is that blood? And she said, oh no, it's just paint. And Tracy was like, okay. And she went back inside and went to work.
See, we don't want to be involved.
No.
That's why we do it.
Yeah.
we try to distance ourselves.
Because are we afraid that we're going to get hurt?
Or are we afraid that it's true? Like,
I think either one could be a reason for that. But yeah. So Tracy testified in the pretrial, and so did Alicia. Alicia denied all of it, saying that she didn't have any knowledge of the crime. During the formal trial that started February 1st,
oh my gosh,
2007, Tracy backtracked and was now saying that she didn't see that.
Tracy.
But she thinks it's a satanic cult involving six people, and they were to blame for the murder. Instead of telling the story of what she knew about Alicia. So wow. As far as I know, Alicia's DNA has never been tested.
What?
Yeah. Alicia's just never been.
I don't understand this.
Yeah.
Wait. Why?
That's a good question. Because we have DNA under Janelle's fingernails of an
unidentified. What about the prints? Were her prints on the black plastic?
Everything that I have read does not say anything.
That doesn't make any sense at all. Why? You have multiple different sets of fingerprints.
I guess they thought, well, they have one person. That's good enough. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't have answers for that one.
That's infuriating.
Yeah. So during an unsworn statement, Glenn said, I lived on Norfolk Island with my then wife, Alicia. I would frequently use the white Honda for shopping trips. On Easter 2002, I was home in the morning. I had been sick and Alicia was at work. Sometime between 11:30 a.m. and 12 p.m., as best as I can remember, I made Alicia a toasted sandwich for her lunch. It took me several minutes to get ready and make it. I got into the car and drove down Hillcrest. I sat with Alicia as she ate her sandwich during her break. I can't recall what we talked about. As best as I can recall, I was there for about 20 minutes and then I drove home. I recall calling Alicia at least once or twice in the afternoon because it was 5 years ago, I can't recall what we talked about.
All right. But you remember the sandwich.
Yeah. And that it took you a few minutes to make it.
This guy's never made a sandwich in his life.
I stayed at home that afternoon and watched TV or played PlayStation till about 4 p.m. when Alicia arrived home from work.
It's amazing that he knows all the times.
Right.
But he doesn't know anything else.
That's exactly. I'm sitting here thinking, oh, as best as you can
remember, it was 4 and then it was
20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. He says, I didn't see Janelle Patton that day. I didn't drive along Rudy Hill Lane that day. I didn't abduct or murder Janelle Patton that day. Alicia and I went for a long drive. We drove around Prince Philip Drive as well as many other roads on the island. I recall that when Janelle's body was found, there was a lot of publicity around the island and there were all sorts of theories. I recall that it was said that she was found in black plastic and that she had been in a hit and run and that she had been stabbed. It had been impossible to go anywhere on the island without hearing what happened to Janelle. So he's telling them, this is where I got all my information. Mm-hmm. That this is why I said what I said.
Yeah.
When I was arrested, I said what I thought the detectives wanted to hear, but I didn't kill Janelle Patton. I've been told about the glass being in the Honda. I used this car to take rubbish to the tip. It was dirty and a wreck when I got it. I don't know how my fingerprints got on the black plastic. I must have touched it at some point. I'm not too sure. I feel sorry for the Patton family. Their loss is enormous. But I didn't murder Janelle Patton. Thank you for listening to me.
And scene. Thank you.
Come on.
What?
Piece of work.
Wow.
March of 2007, Glenn McNeil was found guilty and sentenced.
I'll bet.
sentenced, you ready?
Go on.
To 24 years in prison with the possibility of parole after 18 years.
The Aussies are so soft. Mm.
So while in prison, he gave a new story.
What?
Glenn said he knows who actually committed the murder.
Why? Why? Why is he doing this?
Girl.
This benefits nothing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just say it. It was his drug dealer and his drug dealer's wife. And they brought the body to him to make him dump the body and take the fall for the murder. So his next story that he came up with was that he was homesick with the flu. He's sick now.
Okay. The flu's no joke.
So. Yeah. So he was there sick, coughing, sneezing, stuffy nose, stomach ache, whatever. When the drug dealer and the drug dealer's wife showed up at his house around lunchtime and had a body under a tarp in the back of his truck, the drug dealer told Glenn that he knew that he was the one that messed up his marijuana plants. He's like, I know you did this, so to make it right,
I need you to do me a favor.
You're going to dump this body. Wow. And the drug dealer was, he told him, if you don't do it, I'm going to hurt you and your wife.
Mm.
So he asked the drug dealer where he wanted the body to be dumped. Like, where do you want me to put it? he said, anywhere.
Like, yeah, just in the middle of a field.
So he took Janelle's body out of the truck and put her in the trunk of his car. He went next door, grabbed the black plastic. Why are you grabbing black plastic if she's already in a tarp?
Yeah. And where's the tarp now?
Yeah. So he wore surgical gloves also when he was wrapping her up.
Mm-hmm.
And he took and dumped her where she was found.
And then took off his gloves and put his prints on the plastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Got it.
When searching Glenn's phone records, police did confirm that he did have contact with the drug dealer and the drug dealer's wife before and after the murder. That's all I read about any follow-up on that.
Okay.
I just still have so many questions. Like, what was his story about how his car was abandoned? Like, witnesses saw his car. She was obviously in the trunk of his car. How does he explain that?
And would they have said on the news that she was last seen talking to someone in a white car and he thought, I'll just leave my car here and distance myself from my car?
That's very possible.
But he didn't attempt to clean it or anything.
Right. So many questions. And yeah, not just that, but what was the motive? Detectives have said they never could come up with a motive. I didn't see any report where they talked much about the fact that her pants were pulled down. Was it sexually motivated? I mean, a crime of opportunity. They determined that she wasn't sexually assaulted, remember, but I mean, was he planning to do that and got scared off? Was his
wife humiliating her?
Oh, okay.
Was his wife involved and she did that to humiliate her?
So that is my next question. Is his wife involved? I didn't even think about the humiliation part. That's a very good point. So yeah, was it a crime of revenge? Maybe Janelle flirted with Glenn and Alicia found out. Maybe she did more than flirt since there was rumors that he was sleeping around.
Mm-hmm. And she hadn't written about it in her journal yet.
Right. And so
maybe that's what she was doing in the days leading up to her murder.
Right. And so Alicia found out.
Yeah.
So maybe there's more to that story. But
we just cracked the case.
Yeah. But I have one more thing to tell you.
Oh, no.
It's been 18 years.
Ay.
Yeah. So Glenn has been released. And on February 1st.
Shut your mouth.
Remember that date? What is it with this story in February 1st? Weird.
Isn't it Groundhog Day or something? I don't know.
But I mean, like, I read this story on
February 1st.
And all these, anyway, it's That's Twilight strange. Zone. So, yeah, he arrived back in New Zealand on February 1st. Department of Corrections Deputy National Commissioner David Grigg said, Glenn is subject to returning offenders order, which means, so Glenn was overseas. He was in prison overseas.
Oh,
so now that
in New Zealand.
New Zealand, yes. Yeah. So, or it wasn't in New Zealand because he was overseas. I think he was in Australia.
That makes sense because the crime was committed in Australia, right?
Well, on the island. On the island, yeah.
Which is territory?
Yes, okay. Yes. So a returning offenders order, he's returning to New Zealand. So this order puts him on probation. So the probation officers or parole officers, will be managing his compliance to his conditions.
Okay.
So yeah, he's out there, guys.
Well, if you ever want to go visit, you know, the Shires, which I do someday, but yeah. I don't want to go to New Zealand.
So, yeah, I mean, we learned in last week's case that it's not always good when you let these killers back out on the loose. I hope he's changed. I've said it before. I think people can change, but he has never shown or offered any kind of remorse.
Yeah.
And so I will be posting a picture on our Instagram of him just so that you know what he looks like. Mm-hmm. You can pay attention.
We should make t-shirts with his face on it. So people in New Zealand can just wear them around.
Yeah.
This is the guy.
That's a good idea. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't want to give him any attention by posting his face. We don't like to post the suspects' faces on our Instagram, but I will post his so that you will know what he looks like and you can be careful and be aware.
Yeah, and don't stop and talk to anybody in a white car.
Yeah, I don't know what he's driving these days, but
yeah, this reeks of multiple people involved in her death. And I totally believe that these drug dealers could have been involved.
Sure.
I'm not saying they weren't, but he most certainly was involved.
Right.
And why are they just letting his ex-wife go as if, oh, don't worry.
I don't know. I mean, maybe they did test her fingerprints.
But it just wasn't reported.
Yeah.
That's wild.
But there's unidentified female DNA under her nails. Come on.
And we have that.
Yes.
Why aren't we testing it?
Mind-boggling. But
I have no words. Wow.
So, yeah. Rest in peace, rest Janelle.
I thought you were going to say Foxy and Ruth did it.
Oh, no.
No. Wow. Janelle, fly high, angel.
Yes.
Well, this was just as equally as terrible as last week. Let's do it again next week.
Okay, we'll do it.
Bye, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Bye now. Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please consider leaving us a positive review and rating. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe to our show.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or send case suggestions to cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.